Hi, this is Dr. Scott Keith. Thank you for listening to the Thinking Fellows podcast, a part of the 1517 podcast network. Hey, I'm here to ask you that if anything we're doing here at Thinking Fellows or at 1517.org in general benefits you, that you please consider giving financially to 1517. We're starting our end-of-year campaign, and we would like to raise $150,000 before the end of the year to help us continue to proclaim the gospel of Christ Jesus to as many people as possible in as many ways as possible, and we need your support. Please pray for us. Please tell your friends about us. Please share the link that will be provided in our show notes regarding how to easily give, and please consider giving financially yourself again. Again, we are trying to raise $150,000 by the end of the year to keep proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ to as many people as possible. Thank you very much.
Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and our friend, Dan Price. How are you doing, Dan?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Everybody who works for 1517 has traveled down to Orange County for our Christmas party, and so we're going to actually have a lot of guests on the show from people who work for and with 1517 over the next couple days, and they'll come out. Some of them will come out in December if you're listening now towards Christmas, and one or two of them will come out at the beginning of January too, because we do have a Christmas episode or two to record also at some point. But Dan is on the show today to talk about the, well, Here We Still Stand conference primarily, and probably also the Christ Hold Fast City Event conferences. And the reason he's on the show to talk about that is because you organize those events that we host throughout the year now, and the big event every October. And so Dr. Keith wanted us to do this so that we could kind of talk, I think, about the idea behind them, maybe some of the content there, why we bring certain people there, the events we can do across the country, and then why the big celebration every year. And I think even Scott can talk about how that was a surprise that we're doing that again for anybody who wasn't there this year for the second year.
Yeah.
that this is actually now sort of an annual thing, and it wasn't originally planned that way.
Yeah, right? Not on my end, at least. So yeah, Dan, all I wanted to bring you on the show and do is say, hey, why do we do this Here We Still Stand conference? Why do we do conferences at all, even the city events? Because I think most people see us as an online organization primarily, that 90-some-odd% of what we do occurs online and or through the publishing house and books and whatnot. But we, you know, a couple of years ago, we started doing these conferences, and you know, why is it important to do that?
I think that we saw the value in it, kind of going all the way back to when I first sort of my first interaction with 1517 started, which was when we did an event in Orlando, which we were asked to do. So that there was, for some reason, I got the pressure applied to me to do an event in Orlando, and that's when I first talked with Scott about we needed more help because there was no funds, and didn't have enough people to pull it off. And I think that what happened there, besides, like, you know, you brought in a bunch of great teachers, and there was, you know, the music was great, and but what you really saw was all these people coming together and this community sort of forming around this message of the forgiveness of sins for the sake of Christ. And people getting to share in that, and so you really did have a sort of consolation of the brethren kind of thing going on there, and so I think the value in that was evident in the testimonials that we heard afterwards. People just saying like how much it meant to them, how deeply it affected them to be able to talk to people just like them who understood this. And I think it raised awareness. And we know this. I mean, you guys probably get these emails the same way I do. But all the time, people are like, this is sort of my lifeline. Like, I'm not getting this in the church that I go to or getting this message locally. I'm not getting told that my sins are forgiven. I'm not told that Christ has done it all and that everything's going to be all right. I'm not getting that anywhere else. And so they can hear it in a podcast and they can read it in a blog, but something else happens sort of flesh to flesh that is important, where they get to interact with actual people, when they get to actually hear those sort of things from other people and mix it up with other people that believe and have been affected the same way. And so I think that that events have become as much of it's a content grab. We have all these people give great talks, great lectures, and we get to share that content out, and that's all great. And there's great food and all that. I really think the real benefit, because we could just record lectures, you know. Yeah. We can record talks. We can do podcasts. Something else happens in the flesh, though. I think it maybe sort of goes back to, you know, God's initial statement that it's not good for you to be alone. Like, you suck by yourself, right? You know, and that this isn't just like a marital thing. This isn't God just saying that, hey, everyone needs to be married. We know from other places in Scripture with Paul that that's not the case. But married or not, you need somebody to come alongside you. And so events are a good place for you to meet people and to fellowship. And so I think that's why they've become such a big part of what we do.
Now, we don't by any means think that any of the conferences that we do can be a replacement for going to church, right?
Nope.
I mean, because we get asked that a lot, or I don't know if asked is right, or maybe even sometimes accused of it. But it doesn't even enter our thought process to say, hey, you would come to one of our conferences and you would do that in place of belonging to a local congregation.
No, I mean, I would say that's the case for not just events, it's everything we do. I mean, yeah. I mean, you everything I think that 1517 does, that Christel Fast does, that Thinking Fellows and 30 Minutes and 40 Minutes, all of that stuff is in the best case, it's supplementary. The unfortunate reality, because I don't want to be foolish. The unfortunate reality is in a lot of cases, it actually is primary, because believe it or not, the church is not in this, you know, the context we're working in America, it's not in great shape.
Yeah, and I feel like some of the people who would get upset at any of this are sort of our own Lutherans. And I don't think a lot of them understand just how many non-Lutherans we're reaching. People who do not come from word and sacrament churches, right? Where the preaching of the gospel is sort of not the main idea every Sunday, and they're not getting the Lord's Supper. They're not getting, you know, assurance via their baptism. There's a lot lacking. And so when they hear it for this first time, you're right. In some cases, this is the first time or the only place that they hear these words.
Yeah, ideally, I think ideally it would be purely supplemental. It would be a place for you to go, you know, read articles and listen to podcasts that you know, was theologically rich, that was informing you, that was giving you the forgiveness of sins again, which you'd hopefully had just gotten, you know, on Sunday.
That's right, yeah.
But we oughtn't be foolish, and we have enough objective data at this point to know that that's the case for some people. But for a lot of people, that is not the case,
right?
And so they still go to their church because there's community there, and they're there for that. But they're like, I go to church because I need to go and be a part of a faith community or whatever. But I don't get the gospel there. I'm not being told I'm forgiven there. I would say that's the case more than it's not, And part of then, I think what, at least, and this is sort of maybe like a personal thing. This isn't like a mission statement that we've all agreed upon or anything like that. But I do think that part of what the reason I do the stuff that I do is that I am interested in bringing the theology of the Reformation into churches. I am interested in spreading that theology. I'm not content to have it be that way, and so that means that you've got to preach that message. I mean, the Reformation happened in the streets, man. Like, this happens by writing stuff down and publishing it and circulating it, and it happens when the regular people start getting a hold of it and they start demanding that their churches change and this sort of thing, right? I think that that's part of, for me, certainly, that's part of me, why I do this stuff, is that I want to see that happen. It's not that we need a different Reformation, but the reality is that the theology of the Reformation is not the pervasive theology
in local congregations in America.
No, not at all. I'm not a lifelong Lutheran, so I get to I don't have a ton of blame here. This is more your guys' fault. but the reality is that as far as I can tell historically, we really dropped the ball on this, that we've been too insular, that we haven't tried to get it out. We were immigrant churches, and we built churches for people that came over off boats, and we built churches wherever they were, but we didn't say, hey, we need to have this theology be a pervasive theology. And instead, what we ended up having is in this country, for the United States, and I know we have listeners all over the world, but in the United States, we have a pervasive theology built on revivalism and the first and second great awakening, right, and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so we got work. I mean, I know we're all about the finished work, but we also got work to do. The reality is that when Paul says that he makes up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ, which is an insane statement, that if I said it, I would be considered a heretic, right? Right from the jump. All he means by this is that the gospel doesn't preach itself.
Right.
The proclamation does not happen apart from people doing it. And so that means that
you need a preacher.
Yeah. So the work is finished, but that work has to be proclaimed. And I think what we're trying to do, the tagline is preaching the gospel to as many people as possible in as many ways as possible. And hopefully that does have a snowball effect. I mean, I'm very interested in that.
Well, that's
happening.
A dirty little secret hidden behind all the faith verses, right? Faith comes by hearing, but hearing by the word of God and such things, is that in order to hear it, somebody's got to preach it. And that's exactly what Paul says in Romans 10, right before verse 17, and the verses that come before that. And that's what we sometimes, I think, overlook, and that person from whom we hear the gospel ought to regularly be our pastor when worship occurs in our churches. But it ought to be other people too, right? And there ought to be, like you said, in the best case scenario, this stuff is supplementary to what they're already getting in church. But we can't lie to ourselves. We get the emails. We know that even in our case, we know of hundreds and hundreds of people who contact us and say, I'm not getting this. That maybe is even more on us to make sure that when they do hear it from us, that they're hearing the right stuff, right? That they're getting the goods full force. And so in my mind, that's one of the things for the conferences. I mean, obviously it's to get the people there in that mutual consolation of the brethren, but it's also to get the speakers there, right? Because there's nothing like the preaching of the gospel feeding off the preaching of the gospel. Mm-hmm. We get some of our most powerful messages at city events where there's probably only 100 people in the room, but then we are able to capture those city events on video and on audio, and we're able to share that powerful preaching with thousands and thousands by means of this weird gift that we call the internet.
Yeah, and I think the internet is the press of our day. I mean, Luther, you got to use the press. We have a lot of tools at our disposal that we get to use. Somebody said it this way, which I think was pretty good. He described the work that we do at 1517 and all its related projects. He's like, oh yeah, those guys are wholly resting in the finished work of Christ and wholly devoted to bringing other people into that rest, which I thought was pretty good.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, pretty good.
I'd go with that.
Yeah.
So, Dan, tell the listeners more the difference between sort of a Here We Still Stand and a city event and those two, or just maybe tell them a bit about those two types of conferences that we do.
Yeah.
So, and maybe even within the terms of the city events, like if there was a pastor listening who wanted to host one, what's the process? Because some people might think they can just say, hey, I want a city event, and boom, we're going to make it happen.
Right.
We get enough requests at this point that we sort of have to apply some metrics to this.
So Here We Still Stand is the what I would call the national conference or the annual conference. And so this is 3 days long. Goes do Thursday through a Saturday. It's in San Diego, and it's themed out. We pick a theme. So the theme we just had was Theology of the Cross. The theme for 2019 is the Common Faith, which we'll be building all the talks around, loosely around the Apostles' Creed, and jumping off from other things. But that's sort of what it's themed around, and that's sort of like the big blowout thing. I mean, it's eating together. It's I mean, we have full bands, and the music's great, and we bring in there's 20 something speakers there when you include all the breakouts. So it's really like a huge event.
Podcasting
pre-conference day. Yeah, I mean, it's the whole thing, and that is what people would. It really is a conference / party. I mean, like, it is, if you're looking to come and have fun and like hear great teaching, and it's at a resort, so you don't actually have to leave. It's not, so I've gone to conferences my whole adult life, and most of the time you have a convention center or a church that you're in, and you go to the events during the day, and then at night or whatever, you go back to whatever hotel you're staying in. That's not how this works. Everything is right there. And so this goes on into the night. You're fellowshipping, and the speakers are all very accessible. They're hanging out with you, talking to you. So that's Here We Still Stand. The city events are smaller one-day events that we do we'll take a Saturday, and we'll usually have about six or so speakers. Also, we'll theme it out. But it's not this massive event. It's a day of fellowship and teaching. We do have singing and stuff like that as well. But it's sort of a more stripped down thing where the idea is sort of that we'll come to you. And so we're going to places that are not San Diego, California, or not Southern California, and we're trying to go and tap all these other places in the country. So we've been to Detroit and New York and Dallas and Minot, North Dakota.
Hattiesville,
Mississippi. You don't have to be a big place. It really is trying to hit all these places. And the way that you do that is you email us. You can go over to the City Events page at Christville Fast if you want, and you can send us an email. Typically, what we're looking for is and one thing that's interesting is some people have been doing this is multiple churches sometimes coming together and deciding to pull this off together because it's not absolutely free. The last couple that we've done, we've made free to the public through arranging with the church to sort of divvy up the cost of what it cost. And so so the church puts up a certain amount, we put up a certain amount, and then we make it free to the public so they can use it as a way to try to draw more people in, so people can do a little, even evangelistic in some sense, where you could bring your sort of burnout church friend or your skeptical friend and say, hey, you can come. If you don't like it, you can leave. It didn't cost you anything, that sort of thing. And so right now we do have three scheduled for 2019 for the city events. We're going to be in Austin, Texas, March 9th, and we're going to be in Des Moines, Iowa, April 13th. And the information is not up for this, but I do know the dates will be in Minneapolis on May the 4th. So the spring. So it's March, April, May, bam, bam, bam for city events, and then Here We Still Stand in October. So the thing is, like, Here We Still Stand, there is a price tag on it, even though what you get for what you pay is ridiculous. The ticket price is not the expensive thing. But, you know, if you live in, you know, Alabama and you're like, I'd love to do that, but I got to get on a plane, buy a plane ticket, rent the hotel room.
Buy a conference ticket.
Yeah, but it's not incredibly cheap. City events are also a way for us to really do something that anyone could come to. You don't have to have really any discretionary income to come. And so if there's one of those, if you're like, man, I just couldn't swing that 3-day event, it's just too much. But there's a city event, hopefully at some point near you within driving distance, even if you have to drive a couple hours or whatever, come out to that, and it essentially costs you nothing.
So you also run, and I think it's probably a good opportunity to do this too, you also run the Christ Hold Fast website, mm-hmm. which is essentially a blog site. You probably still publish 40 minutes and 30 minutes up there, right? Mm-hmm. And you also host 40 minutes in the Old Testament, 30 minutes in the New Testament. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Christ Hold Fast is, how you got that started. I think there's, we have a blog site too at 1517. You're obviously one of the projects of 1517. But the the flavor of the blog site at Christful Fast is a little bit different.
Yeah.
And then you host 40 minutes in the Old Testament and 30 minutes in the New Testament, which are two podcasts on the 1517 Podcast Network, which are very popular podcasts, but also very different than, say, like Thinking Fellows or yeah. Root Two in the Wasteland. And why don't you just tell us a little bit about how those got going?
Yeah, so Christful Fast existed before it was part of it. So it wasn't a project that 1517 developed. It wasn't like we got together and thought, like, hey, we should do this. It was something that already existed and then got brought in. So that would be kind of make for someone might be like, well, there's a blog over at 1517, and there's another blog.
Right. Why so many blogs?
Yeah. And even some of the authors are the same, you know, like, yeah. Well, why is Chad Bird or Donovan Riley like writing for, why don't you just combine these things? Well, they existed at the same time, but they were separate. But I think they do separate things while doing the same thing. The end goal of both, I would say, is to preach the gospel, is to point people to Christ, to get people to the finished work of Christ in hopefully each and every post that we write. But the way that it's done or the language that it's used, I think sometimes is a little different. So I would say that that Christful Fast is very popular level writing. And so we write at a very lay level. Like basically anybody, you could have never opened a Bible in your life, and you will probably be able to make sense out of most everything that Christ Old Fast posts. And so in that sense, it's not that it's dumbed down. It's just a way of speaking. So it's a way of speaking with an accent, speaking the gospel with an accent that is understandable to basically anybody. There's a lot, you have a lot at 1517 there, you have a lot more academic cred over there. So we actually at Christful Fast have lay people writing and that sort of thing. And so does 1517, but 1517 also has a lot of people.
Yeah, not as many.
Yeah, they got some more PhDs. They're writing some stuff that, and I don't want to make it seem like if you don't have a theological education, you couldn't understand what's going on over at 1517. But there might be some content that you're like, what are we talking about here? Yeah. Like, and so hopefully the way these things work together well, as far as the blogs go, is that Christful Fast can talk about a lot of the same things that 1517 is talking about at a way that a layperson could understand it. And then sort of is a gateway into maybe talking about these things in more nuanced and more in-depth ways. As far as the podcasts go, 30 minutes and 40 minutes, so it's an Old Testament podcast and a New Testament podcast. Those are really born out of the fact that at heart, I'm just an exegetical guy. So I write exegetically. If I speak somewhere, I always have to be rooted in a text. That's just where I feel comfortable. And I found that serving as a church planner and dealing with a lot of just regular evangelicals, that the way that you talk to them about some of the theological concepts that I believe are crucial is not to go to the Reformation or anything, but to go to the scriptures and show them that this is what the Bible teaches and here's where it teaches it. I didn't think that there were strictly exegetical podcasts that did that. Period. And so those podcasts were really born out of a desire to say, what if we just essentially had a running commentary using this law gospel hermeneutic, using the theology of the Reformation, which is just biblical theology, and we'll just go book by book. We won't avoid anything. We'll tackle everything as it comes, and no one can accuse us of not addressing the whole counsel of God or any nonsense like that. And like whatever the next text is, that's what we're covering. And so I do 40 minutes with Chad Bird in the Old Testament, and I do 30 minutes in the New Testament with Eric Sorensen. And it's a blast, man. And so I am a creature of the word at heart. It's sort of, and that's partially based on, that's really how I came into I'm a Lutheran, and I really got there via the word. I mean, I didn't get there by someone convincing me for some other way. I got there by looking at the text of scripture and saying that's what it says.
Do you think it's fair to say that 40 minutes and 30 minutes, the pace is kind of slow? Like, in other words, you're going verse by verse, so people shouldn't expect to go through all of Genesis in three podcasts.
No. So, I mean, I think we were 60-something episodes in Genesis. I mean, it depends on what's going on, obviously, in the thing. So sometimes you might
skip
cover
genealogies.
Well, we cover them, but like narrative goes a little quicker than some other things, you know. But yeah, I mean, we are 145 episodes of 40 minutes at the time we're recording this, and we have done Genesis, Exodus, and Leviticus, and we are like in the middle of Numbers. So 3.5 books, 145 episodes. So it's gonna be a while. Yeah, it's fairly slow. It's fairly slow. And we did, I think, in the New Testament, we have just finished Matthew and Acts, and that took us 85 episodes to get through those two books.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's... We were just talking about... We did a Q&A episode last week. I don't know if it's last week for listeners, but last week we recorded it, and we were talking about how most people, when they go to Bible studies at the church or growing up in youth Sunday school and things like that, you play 1-2 skippy few with Bible passages. You read, you know, the quote unquote, you know, popular ones or the things you need to know. So you read the beginning of Genesis, and then you read the story of Abraham, and then you skip a bunch of the king stuff and you go to David, and you do those kind of things. And it's really great what you guys do, because you get sort of the total contextual picture, where you don't get these isolated events of God interacting with a particular person or place. And it actually helps address some of the modern issues with, is the God of the Old Testament evil?
Sure. Like, yeah, I think, and I even think that maybe the reason, and this isn't a dig on the lectionary, because I like the lectionary, but I think maybe the reason that people were finding it difficult to find, hey, what do Lutherans think about this passage? And maybe they're trying to find some preacher that preached on some passage that... And if they can't find it anywhere, it's because maybe it doesn't exist on the internet. Because what the lectionary does do, one of the few downsides of it is obviously you have the text that you're going through, but you're not going through everything in a particular book, and so sometimes it is hard to find a Lutheran's take in an audio version of a certain passage. And what 30 and 40 minutes do is actually do that. So we're not just tackling these pre-assigned texts. We're going through the entirety of the whole of the thing. And that's, like I said, that's not a dig on the lectionary. I'm fine with it as a tool. But I think it does mean that most of our published sermons have gaps. If somebody is looking for exegesis on a certain passage, they might not be able to find it.
Yeah, that's probably true. One of the things, going back to the conferences that I wanted to hit on, is that the people who show up to this is a diverse group of people.
Yeah.
It's lay people. It's there's a lot of pastors that show up. Mm-hmm. There's academic theologians who are there, and it's much different than most other theological conferences I've ever been to. So if you're a pastor and you've gone to, you know, if you're in the LCMS, a district conference, or the annual meeting and stuff like that, or one of the conferences at the seminaries, this is very different from that, in that there's a lot of scheduled time to talk with one another. Like you said, there's a lot of fellowship, and you're not just surrounded by other pastors or other academic theologians.
Or all men or all women. I mean, like, it's pretty split. I mean, like, it's...
Yeah, people have suggested doing like a men's and women's part of the conference and things like that. I think it's much better just having... Yeah. Sort of the way we do it, where it's everybody together. And there's been a lot of... One of the comments, I think it was Pastor Koch who said this, is that when he goes to pastors' conferences, it's interesting because there are people who are sort of behind the pulpit, right, proclaiming the forgiveness of sins and never really getting it proclaimed back to them. Mm-hmm. And then they'll go to these conferences where there's a whole gathering of these people who don't get it proclaimed back to them, and they still don't when they go to one of these conferences. And then... You come to Here We Still Stand, and you have this whole group of pastors who finally are on the other side of getting sort of the forgiveness of sins proclaimed over them during this whole week.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think that people are actually, and they come to expect it, and I think we get called out if we didn't do it, is that I had someone say, I love Here We Still Stand. It's essentially absolution fest. Which is, yeah. In other words, he comes there expecting to hear about the forgiveness of sins, and like he would be really disappointed if he didn't, right? And you're right about the diversity there. I mean, as far as there's all age groups are represented. I mean, we had a great age demographic breakdown this year. I mean, it was wonderful.
Yeah, it was fairly evenly split. I mean, if you take the high age and the low age and kind of average the rest, it was amazing how evenly split it was.
Yeah, and that is unique that you have. It's not a young person's conference or an old person's conference. It really is. I mean, there's a bunch of people. However old you are, there are people there that age. Men, women, guys with PhDs, people that just got saved. I mean, like the whole thing is going on.
One of the things that I think it dismisses too is this myth that if you make a conference look good or have style to it, that you're just trying to like sort of appeal to the worldliness of the youth and things like that. And like you said, we get people from really high liturgical backgrounds, both in the Lutheran and the Anglican tradition, things like that. You get a lot of, we have a whole group of young Reformed people who come from Orange County down and things like that, to people who are coming from evangelical backgrounds. And they're all sort of there to get the same message. And people know about it because there is a certain branding to it, because we put energy into marketing it to people, to talking about it on podcasts, things like that. Whereas a lot of conferences are sort of, I think, underattended because that part of conferencing gets neglected. And that's one of the things that you and the people who work with you on it haven't dropped the ball on.
Yeah, I get frustrated, and I definitely reject the idea that if you're trying to do something well and care about how it looks and how it's laid out, and if making it to where it's aesthetically pleasing, that is somehow in any way, shape, or form a compromise on the message of the gospel. Those two things just don't follow for me, and it seems like that is something that people do. They're like, oh well, if they care about how it looks, they don't care about the gospel anymore. And I'm like, no, I don't think that caring about the way something is presented means that you don't care. You don't care about the message. I would actually argue the other way around. You take care of things that you care about, and we care about this message, and we want it to not look like we don't. Like we just threw it together. You know, that's. I don't think that's being a good steward of something we're trying to do. So
we're having the 1517's creative director on one of the next episodes to talk about just that. I mean, because we definitely try to cultivate a look, and one of the things that we try to identify when we cultivate that look is, does this look like it's quality?
Yeah.
You know, does this look like something that we took our time thinking about all aspects of it?
Like we care about it.
Like
right?
We care about it. Yeah. And so we're going to have him on to talk about that, because this is an idea that was not foreign to the Reformation. I mean, Luther himself went through several printers before he found one that he thought produced a product that was of the quality that matched what he was trying to communicate in his writings.
Right.
And so this isn't foreign to what we do. And even as Lutherans, if we value the idea of vocation and Christian vocation, and that you're serving people through your vocation in the world, you'll value producing things that look like you care about them.
Right.
And that are of quality.
Yeah.
And that work well.
Yeah.
And that are easy for people to use and to get benefit from.
Yeah, you want to try to do all the things that you have set out to do as well as you can do them.
Right.
And you want to find people that are going to do those things well. It's not foreign to the Reformation. It's not foreign to the Bible. I mean, when God sets stuff up, like when he's like talking about like building tabernacles and stuff like this, I mean, it's like, pretty specific. Yeah, he's not like, hey, throw some stuff together.
We're
going
to do it.
No, man. He's like, I need this to be just like this, and it better look just like this. That's because... Funny. Because it represents me, like my name, my name's is attached to this. So don't go screwing around and messing it up. I think that's right. That we, you know, and you don't want to get all hung up on it, where you make some kind of law But no, it's there is a I think a lot of it comes down to just having a theology that has room for things to be beautiful too. And that's a big part of it, is that, hey, it's okay to, and people might think that's a weird way to talk about a conference or whatever, it's beautiful, but aesthetically appealing, that's what it is. You're saying like, hey, this is worth doing well and having it be pleasant, not having it be an eyesore would be a good thing.
Yeah. So Dan, where can people find out about Christ Held Fast, 40 minutes in the Old Testament, 30 minutes in the New Testament, City Events, and Here We Still Stand?
Okay, so you can go to Christ Held Fast or 1517. So you can go to ChristHeldFast.org, 1517.org for the podcast. They're on both of those. So it's part of the those are both part of the podcast network. You can get to Here We Still Stand by just going to HereWeStillStand.org. You can get there from Christ Held Fast or 1517, either way. The city events, you just go to Christ Held Fast, go to the events page, and all the ones have upcoming are there. And then you can also watch videos from all the past ones. And so all that content is free. And we didn't mention this, but if you just want to be awesome and buy a copy of the book that I wrote with the co-host of 30 Minutes in the New Testament, Scandalous Stories, that book came out this fall. And so it's a sort of commentary on parables, which again is sort of my whole gig is exegesis. So you can get that. That's over at 1517 Ramson or any of those places.
If you also, if you are interested in coming to the 2019 Here We Still Stand, if you came this last year or you want to come for your first time, there will be a link in the show notes to that. And under the link will be the code that the Thinking Fellows have for that too. So then we know that you bought a ticket because you're listening here.
And it has sold out both. I mean, we're 2 years running sold out. If you want to go and you should go, if you're thinking about it and it's something you could do and you're just trying to figure out if you want to or not, you do want to and you should, you will not regret it. I haven't heard anyone regretting coming yet. But you will want it. You'll have to get on that. And I'm not joking around. I think like what happened last year is I think people thought I was screwing around and I would say like, you better get on it. Like we're going to run out of tickets. And they thought like, oh, that's like part of the sales pitch. You say you're running out of tickets so you can sell tickets. I'm not joking. And then like, they were all horrified when months and months before it was like, no, it's sold out.
There are people who like emailed me in August. They're like, I didn't think it would be sold out yet.
They're asking for the secret stash of tickets.
Well, I said there was like 15. I remember saying there was like 15 tickets left at the first week of July or something like that. So
So I think
we're not joking around. You should get them.
We're recording this in the first week in December, and I believe there are fewer than
I think there's under 100 for the general public.
I know there's under 100. Yeah. I think we're under 80 at this point.
Yeah.
See, we're gonna sell out probably twice as quick as we did last year. So you should do that. And then while they're available to, if you're listening to this show, obviously you should sign up for the podcasting pre-conference day. It's another $35. That's mostly because there's a lunch.
Right, you get lunch included.
Lunch and beverage provided during that time. So that's basically covering that and the patio seating and stuff like that.
Exactly. So, and if you live in Austin or Des Moines, go over and come out, or anywhere near there, travel distance. If you're driving distance to either of those places, come. Me and Scott will be in both of those places, along with a whole host of other people doing city events. So if you're in Texas or the great farming state of Iowa, come hang out.
Yeah, city events are great. I mean, I really have a hard time always believing that, and it's just got to be that people don't understand it or have a hard time getting the day off for a Saturday or whatever. But I always feel like if people love Here We Still Stand, you know, and all the how hard it is logistically to get out to San Diego, I'm always shocked that we're not absolutely filling the places with city events, because it's a lot of the same kind of thing, definitely the same kind of teaching, a lot of the same kind of ethos for no money and close to home. And so if you have an opportunity to drive a couple hours and hit up a city event, you should do it. It's well worth it. The quality of speaking at city events is on par in general with the quality of speaking at Here We Still Stand.
Yep. All right. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can find the Thinking Fellows and all the other podcasts on the 1517 Podcast Network at 1517.org/podcasts. Bye-bye.